This episode is brought to you by Washington Wine. Download the Map My Washington Wine app. It's Map My WA Wine and get all the Washington wine right in your hand. Washington Wine, this is now.
If your food media diet is fueled by HRN, become a monthly donor today. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. I'm going to say hi to everybody. I'm Peter Reinhardt. You're on Pizza Talk, presented by Pizza Quest, and today we're with my friend Leo Spazzieri, who we've referred to in an interview in an earlier issue of Pizza Quest, if you go and see the interview, as the greatest guy you never knew. Now, that was 3 years ago when we did that interview, Leo, and since that time, you are no longer this unknown factor. You're pretty well known now in the pizza world, the pizza community, and your notoriety is growing. But for those people who are seeing you and meeting you for the first time, maybe you could kind of fill us in, tell everybody your backstory, and we can also refer them to the interview, the written interview we did on Pizza Quest. But maybe the headlines, take them through your journey.
Sure.
From the greatest guy you never knew to the guy that everybody wants to know.
So my name is Leo Spazzieri. I've been in the pizza business all my life. I started at 13 years old and was at a pretty historic place here in Chicago called Nancy's, where I started. And over the years, I really built that reputation as being the Chicago pizza guy. And it took a long time to get that off my shoulders, as just being known for Chicago pizza. But, you know, it's a great thing. I mean, Chicago's a great city. And, you know, over the years, I've had some incredible positions that I've held. I was the executive chef for all the Giordano's restaurants in Chicago, and a lot of corporate chef positions at some really large chains. And that's really where my focus started to get involved in the dough side of pizza. As a corporate chef for a lot of, like I said, multi-unit chains, it was really important for me to understand consistency of doughs and, you know, kind of what makes these doughs different and how to kind of evolve them through multiple locations. So I really took that seriously. And over the years, I did a lot of training. And I think that's one of the really big reasons why I decided to open a school. And it was that focus on education that really was something that inspired me through the years. So, you know, that's when I got to meet Tony Gemignani for the first time. And I went to the International School of Pizza. I was in one of his first pizza classes. And I can actually remember when I got there, Tony made me make a Chicago pizza again. You know, like he wanted to see a deep dish and a stuffed pizza. And this is all pre...
He wanted to see how many ideas he could steal from you. Is that what you're saying?
Tony's a great guy. And, you know, I tell people this all the time. You mentioned like getting to a point where people start to recognize you and you get a lot of recognition. And over the years, you know, it seemed to be that there's this kind of thing now that, you know, maybe it's just because of our education levels. Tony and I came out of the same school at Scuola Italiana Pizzaioli. And
can you say the name of that school again, but slowly for those who don't know about it?
Sure. Scuola Italiana Pizzaioli. And it's the oldest pizza school in Italy, located in Venice. We both trained under the headmaster, who's Graziano Bertuzzo, who's, you know, world renowned as a pizzaiolo.
Yeah, Tony mentioned him in his interview as well. It sounds like he's been a very major influence of both of your lives.
Yeah, and you know, over the I would say probably since I opened the school, I don't know, it's just a weird thing that I keep hearing, like, you know, people mention things like, you know, like Leo and Tony, and then all of a sudden it became like a competition thing. And I remind people all the time, it's like, man, you guys got to know, if you're getting any knowledge out of me, you're getting a lot of stuff that came from Tony as well, because Tony's really a guy that, you know, he's the guy that took me out of Chicago. And I give him props to that all the time, because until the point where I went to California and I stayed with him for about a week. And it was really one of those, like, what do you mean you've never stretched a New York style pizza before?
So yeah, going back to Tony. So Tony in a way kind of also invited you to be part of his World Pizza Champions team as well, right?
Yeah, and again, this is going back to a time when again, Chicago style pizza wasn't even a thing. I can remember the first time I wanted to compete in the International Pizza Challenge at Pizza Expo. And I called Pizza Today, and I had one of the ladies on the phone, and I'm giving her all my information to register. And she's telling me, because I was making a Chicago pizza, I had to go into the non-traditional category. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I was running Giordano's, and just the one location that I was in charge of, you know, we were doing about 1,200 pizzas a day out of.
Right.
And I'm like, if this isn't traditional, I don't know what is. And that's kind of when Tony heard the story, and he's like, man, I think you got a great thing. I'd love to meet you. And then it was like within 6 months, he's got me on a plane, and I'm traveling with the World Pizza Champions team to Salsa Maggiore, Italy, and making the first Chicago stuffed pizza in a competition. Actually, I wasn't the first. I was the second. I don't know if you guys know Sean Browser and his wife Jackie.
Sure.
It was actually Jackie who made the first Chicago stuffed pizza the year before I did. So there's a lot of misinformation on the internet. People think I was the first, but I wasn't. I was just, I think, made the biggest. I made a 20-inch Chicago stuffed pizza.
How did it go over?
It's historic. It's a historic story. I went over there, and Graziano, the other guys, the oven judges, went up to Graziano and like, this guy tells us that he needs 25 minutes to bake his pizza. And like, they would give you like 15 minutes total to bake your pizza. Right.
They're looking for like a 60-second pizza. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when Graziano saw this like giant 20-inch pan, I could see the chuckle, and he's like, just let him go ahead. Let's just see what he's going to do. And I made this behemoth. I had used grande cheese at the time, and there was almost, I think it was about 8 pounds of mozzarella inside of that pizza. And when I brought this thing to the judges, I served it on appetizer plate, the platters that we would use at Giordano's. I served each slice on that giant dish. And when I pulled this, the cheese pull, I literally could have stood on a 12-foot ladder and stretched that cheese to the roof. The judges didn't know what to do. They didn't know what this was. And literally, I came in dead last place. But every journalist that you could have thought of, Irish, Japan, all the different TV companies were all over the place. Like, I was some celebrity with this pizza. They'd never seen it.
Yeah, and you kind of lost the competition, but won the war.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, talking about how, like, Tony's always been a visionary like that, you know, and he's a pioneer. They call him the GOAT for a reason because of that. And I think that Tony saw something back then, especially in me, that he's like, hey, you know what, this isn't just a regular guy from the streets, you know, making pizzas. Yeah. This guy's got some passion for what he's doing. And, you know, again, my love for Tony, he's like a brother to me.
Yeah.
And as for a lot of us in the industry.
A lot of people feel that way about him. Yeah, that's for sure. But before we leave the Chicago thing, since we've got a guy here now who's kind of an authority on the Chicago, you know, pizza style, let me ask you about that. One of the things, when you were over in Italy, is there any kind of precedent? Because a lot of people ask me this, and I don't know the answer. Is there a precedent in Italy for something in that Chicago deep dish style? I think of it as like pizza rustica or something like that. And there must be some Italian version that lives somewhere in the country that it refers to, or is it just a total Chicago creation?
So it actually derives. So when we talk in our classes, when I do my certification course, we talk a lot about the five styles from Italy and how they immigrated to the United States. And the closest thing that I can tell you that there is a pizza that comes from Sicily. It's actually a Southern Italian pizza. More of, you mentioned pizza rustica, or maybe that old, the calzone, we call it, that we would eat maybe around Easter time, both in Sicily and in Calabria, where my family's from. But that pizza was filled with like eggs and different types of cheeses. And I think it was the family that brought it to Chicago that turned it into what it is today by putting the mozzarella instead of the eggs inside. And then instead of leaving the top just white or in bianco, we would call it, they put the pizza sauce on top and baked it.
So in Calabria, where your roots are, what would they call a pie like that? Is there a name for it?
They're called exactly that, a pie. I've got a YouTube video up that's out right now that's got over 1 million views, and it's really just all over the place. And again, it's one of those things that I can't get away from being called that Chicago pizza guy. But if you would see some of the comments, you know, there's, you know, 20,000 likes, but then there's like 1,000 that are going back to the whole Jon Stewart thing that they hate it.
Right.
And the Italians. Right. The Italians tell me, like, God forbid, take that Italian flag off of your uniform. You're in
disgrace.
Exactly. It's so funny. And, it, you know, and then when I respond to them in Italian, then all of a sudden they back off a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's a big thing. When we talk about a lot about innovation and things in our world, just, you know, what's a pizza to one person doesn't mean that that's got to be the say-all, end-all, because pizza really is never-ending. And, you know, talking to guys like John Arena, for example, who's another really close friend and a mentor to me, that's really one of his mantras throughout the years that he's always talked about, that, you know, what makes your idea of pizza correct and what makes this guy's pizza incorrect? And that's one of the things I love.
I think that's a really good point, and we have talked about that quite a bit on with many people. But before I lose you on this one, you mentioned five styles of pizza that are, quote, authentically Italian. What are those five styles? Well, we know the sort of Naples style, but what are all five?
So I'm going to tell you the five that I got master certified in, all right? And these are the ones that we call out all the time. So the Neapolitan, all right, pizza, the pizza that comes from Naples, Italy, being, let's say, the mother of all pizzas, okay? Pizza Napolitana is number one, okay? And then we've got the round pizza eaten throughout the rest of Italy, which we call Pizza Classica, all right? Very different in style from the pizza that you would see in Naples, because Pizza Classica is baked a little bit longer. The edge, the cornicione, is browned a little bit more. We see more types of toppings and not just, let's say, fior di latte or mozzarella di bufala on top, where you're seeing different types of mozzarella closer to, let's say, the mozzarella that we have here in the United States that's dry and shredded. And that's one of the big styles, right? So those are two.
So is the Classica, would that be something that we in the United States would think of as either New York style or maybe American style? Is it closer to that sort of Americana?
Yeah, we call out when you talk about New York pizza, okay, the pizza that we know today as New York style pizza, I would say is the closest relative to Pizza Classica.
Okay.
But when we talk about Pizza Napolitana and we talk about the people who immigrated from from Italy to the United States and settled in New York and created those first pizzas, well, that pizza, I think, is closer to maybe the coal fire style, a pizza that's baked at a lot higher temperature, right? So thinking of, like, you know, we call out Lombardi's as the oldest pizzeria in America. And then we know that there's a bunch of others that are probably just
like New Haven and
exactly. So when we talk about those styles, I think those are the similar ones to Neapolitan, right? But the pizza that we know today as that round edge, thin crust pizza, probably the closest is that Pizza Classica.
Okay, so that's two.
That's two.
What are the other three?
Then we've got the famous Pizza Integlia, okay? Pizza Integlia is called out as coming from Sicily. And then we also have the Pizza Integlia that's in Rome. So they're two very different pan-style pizzas. And the major differences are the amount of water and the maturation process to come up with the structure of those doughs. So Pizza Integlia is the third one.
Can you spell this? Is that T-A-G-L-I-O? Is that how we would Americanize it?
No, that's taglio. Taglio means to cut, okay?
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
If you were to go and have pizza in taglia, okay, you would go in Rome and have go into a pizzeria, and they would offer it to you as al taglio, meaning that it's going to be cut and then weighed out, okay? So taglia refers to the pan. It's the pizza pan, and it's T-E-G-L-I-A, taglia.
Okay.
Okay. We also have another style in Rome called pizza al metro or pizza alla palla. Okay. La palla is the peel, the long peel, and al metro refers to the size, the meter long pizza. But if you go to historic places in Rome for that style, you know that, like, the famous Campo del Fiore, right?
Antico Forno,
Exactly, Antico Forno in the old center, right, of Rome. That pizza is actually 2 meters long, 6 feet long. And it's an amazing process when you see that pizza made, because they actually bunch all the dough up on a very small platform, and then they pull it the rest of the way to make it that size.
They jiggle it in, And I've had that, and it's intoxicating. It's so good.
Last year, I was actually very fortunate. I was able to, I was at the Fancy Food Show, and I was doing a demonstration in one of the booths, and of all people, Jim Leahy came up to me and introduced himself and said hello and blew me away, called me maestro and all that stuff.
And of course, most people know Jim Leahy as the originator of the New York Times No Need Bread, and also a baker and pizza maker of great renown.
He's a he's an unbelievable baker, an unbelievable person. He invited me to his bakery called Sullivan Street the next morning. And I went over there to visit him. And when I went there, the first thing that he wanted to show me was his pizza alla palla. And he does his exactly the way the Campo del Fiore does, the 6-footer. And I actually have a photo of me and Jim holding this 6-foot pizza. It's actually just that they call it in bianco again, more of a focaccia like dough at that stage, because it didn't have any toppings. And he's just an amazing person, just a good all-around guy. So that's what, number four?
We got Napoletana, we've got Classica, we've got Intaglia, we've got alla palla.
Alla palla, all right. And then we have the senza glutine, which is the gluten-free, which is a whole nother style out there. And we call that out as being an Italian style, because if you see the work that the Italians have done specifically on the gluten-free pizza, we talk about the Europeans being so far ahead of us in that game, right? They've really studied and focused on it. I can remember talking about, we were talking about Tony and going out to Salsa Maggiore. I remember, like, maybe the second year that I was with the team and we went to the championships out there. It was the first time that the World Pizza Champions team was going to attempt to compete in gluten-free. And I will never forget. Maybe I'm gonna tell a story that I shouldn't, but I'll never forget.
That's the kind of stories we like to hear,
These guys were, I was not competing in that category, but the ones that were did, I'm not going to mention any names.
Yeah.
The ones that did, I'll never forget, just that white, pasty, it's, you know, it's really sticky dough, right?
Yeah.
It was just a mess. So that was a perfect example. Like, when you see the types of pizzas that are being made in gluten-free, and the amount, the types of bread that are being made, you cannot tell. If you go to Naples right now and you have a gluten-free pizza, you would not be able to tell the difference between that gluten-free pizza and a regular Neapolitan pizza baked in that wood-fired oven.
Really?
They're unbelievable. They're
Is there a long tradition of this style, or is this a relatively new innovation for them as well?
So it's I would say it's newer innovation, and I would say that it's probably something that's really begun to get a focus over the last 10 years, which is definitely farther along than we are here in the States.
Interesting.
But we're getting better at it. And again, you know, this is one of the classes that I teach here at the Academy is that gluten-free. I had twin brothers from Naples actually come out last year and did a class with me, who are renowned in Naples as gluten-free pizza makers.
Really?
And we made some incredible bread, and we made Kaiser rolls. Out of all things to say we were going to make with two Italian guys from Naples, we made Kaiser rolls that were gluten-free. And at the end, we were opening these things up. I had about 50 people in that class, and we were doing, like, you know, mortadella and fresh mozzarella and everything. And you want to talk about why the Italians live the way they do. It's for things like that.
You know, that we could do a whole show, I think, on this aspect, because the gluten-free category is, of course, huge right now, but it's also controversial within the pizza world. A lot of people say, you know, they get offended if somebody says, do you offer a gluten-free pizza? And they feel that that's almost sacrilege. But you're saying, no, it's no longer considered that at all. In fact, it's there's a big area opening up on that. So we've got to find out, what about things that we think of as pizza, like focaccia and schiacciata, where do they fall in the scale?
Those would all get in with the pizza integra, right? So we've got focaccia that comes from all over Italy. You know, it could be a focaccia genovese, it could be a focaccia pugliese, depends on where you're coming from. And, you know, even those in their own styles, the focaccia is much different than the focaccia that we traditionally see here in the States. And it's becoming more evolved and it's becoming better. But if you look at those, like one of the things I love about doing that focaccia genovese, for example, it's just that white-topped focaccia. And inside, what they do is they make something called a salamoia. And salamoia is a mixture of olive oil, water, and sea salt. And they beat it together to create an emulsion. And they coat and almost saturate the top of this dough with that salamoia. And when the dough bakes, obviously, we know what putting steam inside of an oven does to the top of a loaf. Well, it does almost the same thing to the top of that focaccia and just creates this open, loose structure on the top, and it's gorgeous.
And we've seen that done, I think, Osama Nosrat's TV show on Netflix. What is it, salt, acid, oil, whatever it is, you know, her show, she actually demonstrates that and talks about it in her book as well. And I think more people know about that now than ever knew about it because of that one that blew up pretty big.
Yeah. And you know, these are some, these little techniques, these, you know, we call them, these aren't secrets. These aren't tricks. These are things that have been done for, you know, 100 years. And, you know, maybe we're just the first ones to be shedding some light on it here in the States. But again, I think that this is what makes these styles of pizza in Italy so special. And then, you know, why I think the Italians go crazy when we bring them here and then we innovate. I'll call them innovative, yeah. Right? We change them a little bit. And sometimes I get why there's that frustration. But on the other side of it, I know that we need to continue to push the envelope to create new great things.
Yeah. Well, Leah, this would be a great time for us to take a little bit of a break. We've covered an awful lot of ground, but we're going to come back and do a whole other show with you and continue to talk. And I'd love in the next segment for you to take us a little bit around your school. You mentioned the school that you've created in Chicago. What's the full name of the school?
So I'm the co-founder and maestro istruttore of the North American Pizza and Culinary Academy in Lyle, Illinois. We're out just outside.
And when we come back, you can tell us more about that. Your partner, Anthony, your wife, show us maybe if the camera will move, you could show us some of the great tools you have.
Yeah,
there.
I'll take you around.
We'll hear about that and continue exploring sort of this world of pizza styles and you can tell us, you know, some of the classes that are even coming up, you know, at the school. We'd love to hear more about that. I'm with Leo Spazieri, our friend, our no longer the great unknown, but now becoming, you know, one of the big names in the pizza world. And a lot of it has to do with the school that he's created in Chicago, sharing the knowledge that he's accrued over the last 30 years in the industry. We're on Pizza Talk, presented by Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhart with Leo Spazieri. Come back and join us on the next episode. Thanks. We'll be right back with more Pizza Quest right after this break.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. You may have noticed that we have a whole new look. We also launched a new website that's going to make your listening easier and more enjoyable than ever before. HRN is the original food podcast network. And as we enter a new chapter in our 12-year history, I want to ask you to invest in HRN for the long haul. If you rely on this show to fuel your food media diet, become a monthly sustaining member today. Our members keep the voice of America's food movement alive and kicking. Your donations support this podcast along with 40 other shows on Heritage Radio Network. Your contribution helps give HRN the security we need to stay on the airwaves throughout the pandemic, and your continued support is allowing us to reopen our studio. Plus, we like to give our regular members special treatment. So sign up to become a monthly donor and get access to our secret menu. We've gathered together exclusive discounts and offers from some of your favorite food and beverage brands. So you get to enjoy insider pricing on goods that will ship right to your door. Join our community of monthly donors, and special deals will come your way throughout the summer. So can you make a gift of $5 or $10 a month? It'll show me and our whole team at HRN how much this podcast and food radio in general means to you. Become a monthly sustaining member today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
I'm Peter Reinhart. Welcome back to Pizza Talk, presented by Pizza Quest. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Leo Spazieri, our guest today, is in Chicago, Illinois, and he's at his school. What's the name of that school again, Leo?
The North American Pizza and Culinary Academy.
All right. And earlier in a previous episode, Leo was telling us about his formation and training in Italy. What was the name of the big school that you and Tony and others have gone where you got certified?
So it's called Scuola Italiana Pizzaioli, located in Venice, Italy.
And I know that, Leo, you were really one of the very first, maybe you and Tony are the two first Americans ever certified by that school, right?
Yeah, and actually we're the only two master instructors in the United States. Both of our schools, Tony's got the International School of Pizza, and then I've got the North American Pizza and Culinary Academy here in Chicago. And we are the only two certified schools in the United States with Scuola Italiana Pizzaioli. So that's a pretty big honor for us.
So now any North American who wants to get essentially certified in that lineage doesn't have to go to Italy. They can come right to you and get trained
Absolutely.
There.
And the cool thing about it is that, there's a lot of people teaching pizza, right? Which is an awesome thing. It's great for our industry. But the great thing about what our schools do, mine and Tony's schools, is that because Scuola Italiana Pizzaioli is actually accredited, we wear these insignias over here. This is part of a group called SGS. And SGS maintains like an ISO 9001 certification. And periodically, our schools get basically checkup, from these organizations to make sure that we're teaching our curriculum properly. Yeah. So this is like, it is kind of like the gold standard when we call out. If you're serious about getting certified as a pizzaiolo or learning traditional methods, either the Italian methods or even the methods here from the United States in all the different styles, this is legit 100%. This is the top of the mountain and we love this.
And you're not just teaching the Napoletana style, you're teaching all five of the classic Italian styles of pizza, correct?
That's right. And, this is actually one of the cool things about the road that Tony and I have taken. Because while we're still kind of parallel in our teaching, Tony's taken the philosophy of incorporating the American styles of pizza into his certification course, where my focus is on the five styles from Italy and then how those styles immigrated to the United States.
I see.
So it's really a focus on Italian pizza, and then we can show you every style of pizza from those styles of pizza.
So you also can show people how to make a Detroit style or a Chicago deep dish style, any style kind of grew out of those master styles. It's kind of like that, kind of like the mother sauces of pizza.
It really is. And, you're thinking of a mother sauce, one small change in an ingredient will change the sauce completely. And it goes the same with our dough, and talking about things like high hydration doughs to very low hydration doughs, like the high Chicago style, and everything in between.
Well, you have a facility there that you've created. It's been open for about 3-4 years now.
No, it's less than that. We're a little over 18 months. Actually, July will be 2 years.
I guess it's been 3 to 4 years since I heard you start to talk about it. And it takes a while to make these things happen. But I've had a chance to teach there in your school and loved the time I was with you and got a chance to see a little bit about how it was set up. Can you give us a little walk around and show us everything that's going on there?
So actually the area that I'm sitting in right now, I'm in what's called the show kitchen. And when you walk in the front door, and especially when you come here to spend 5 days with me for the certification course, you'll see like I got the coffee bar right behind. So this is where we start every morning. And this is where a lot of the powwows happen. A lot of like checking through your notes, from the night before. And all the students will actually sit around tables drinking coffee, before class and talking about those. So this is a really cool piece because even while I was in Italy and we would do our classes out there, every morning, that's how we would start out. We would go to the coffee bar around the corner, have coffee, and go back.
It's like your cafe.
This is like a little cafe.
I'm craving a cappuccino as I'm sitting here watching you.
Well, I'm going to actually pick this up. Hopefully I do this justice.
All right.
I'm going to show you behind me here.
All right.
And what you see right here, all these tables that are set up, this is our classroom style setup where all the chairs are facing forward, right? Normally we would do classes that are pretty large in this area. And, you know, again, being that we're part of Scuola Italiana Pizzaiola, you can see right behind me, you know, we're very proud of that, being part of that group. I'm going to walk you around over here. And this area is actually where all our teaching happens. So the shop.
I remember doing a demo. I did a demo class right behind that counter there.
That's right. So, you know, you can see right behind me, it's a giant island that holds probably about 20 seats right here at the island. The chef would, I'm going to bring this around here. The chef would stand here at the cooktop, right? And, you know, it wouldn't be an Italian cooking school without an Italian coffee pot on the stove. And they would sit here and they would do their classes. And then right above here, there's a camera right there. And then that projects everything onto this screen that's right here. So no matter where you're at inside of this room, you've got a lot of a visibility to what the chef instructor is doing. We've got wireless microphones in here so that, you know, again, everybody could hear really well.
And how many people could fit in that room?
We try to cap it at about 60 people when we do a private event or, you know, a big demonstration. But the key to this, and I think that this is one of the things that a lot of people when I'm doing these interviews have been asking about, is how's this going to affect you post-COVID, you know? And for us, when we do a normal class here, we specifically keep those groups under about 12 to 15 people. My five-day certification course, we always cap that at 8 people because we want to give that one-on-one experience from you know, student to instructor. People are coming here from all over the United States and a lot of times from all over the world to get in front of me to take these classes, and we want to make sure that it's not oversaturated. So actually, when we're ready to open up, you know, hopefully we've got our next five-day certification course coming up in July. And we're going to do it just the way we've always done it, except that, you know, we'll be wearing masks. And,
You've already got your social distancing thing in place since you've been doing it that long.
Exactly.
But you also do get, in addition to the individuals, you do get corporate or companies that basically contract with you to bring their team in for corporate training as well, right?
So in my past life, I was in R&D, right? Research and development.
Yeah.
I was the dough specialist for one of the largest frozen pizza manufacturers in the United States. And that's really where I was able to take all of the knowledge that I had in dough making and figure out how to make these things run high speed. Totally different world, but it all is dough chemistry. And all of a sudden, all these manufacturers that I was dealing with, you know, these major companies, the Nestle's of the world, and, you know, I could probably tell you that almost every manufacturer of ingredient has probably done events in here so far. And they're really looking for that experience, number one, to train their staff on what the independent pizza guys are doing. Because it's our world. The independent pizza world is really where all the trends come from. And eventually, you'll see those trends end up in the grocery store. Like, last year, we saw the first Detroit-style pizza in the freezer case.
That's
you know,
right.
How about that? So, you know, this is some pretty interesting things. But we have a lot of really high-end clients. A lot of them we have to keep confidential for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But, you know, my fingers have been in a lot of doughs across the United States and a lot around the world, even in Canada. And it's really a fun experience.
Well, so you're in the front of the house now. Can you give us a peek in the back of the house?
Yeah. So this I'm going to bring you into the oven room.
All
which
right.
Now the oven room has been converted to a curbside pickup headquarters.
It's already making me envious. So I'm seeing all these wood fired ovens and different styles and deck ovens. You've got a whole bunch of tools there.
We have 3 wood-fired ovens here. This is an actual VPN-approved Neapolitan oven. This is from a company called Marana, which is from Verona. And this one actually has the certificate of the VPN, the Pulcinello. So this is an actual Neapolitan oven. I had it custom painted the same color as the Naples soccer team. And, you know, everything very traditional. Even the pizza tools are... the Neapolitan pizza tools and a lot of that sort of thing. So we try to really give our students as close to a traditional experience as we can without them traveling to Italy.
You're kind of standing in the ultra-Orthodox section of your shop.
This oven right behind me, this is a rotating deck oven. Again, another Murano oven.
Something that did not exist in Italy 100 years ago.
Yeah, but this is the one, actually, this was the innovator. Murano innovated this technology in the spinning floor oven. This one actually, not only does the floor spin, but it's got this this little remote control panel right here. And the whole floor actually lifts up and down so that you can change the temperature of the oven by just moving the pizzas closer to the door, to the dome.
So you can dome the pizzas without lifting them.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So you can do multiple style pizzas in one oven.
How many pizzas can you do in that oven at a time?
This pizza, if I'm doing 12-inch pizzas, I can do probably about 14, 15 pizzas inside of this oven.
With a pretty big flow there, yeah.
Absolutely. And the recovery time is really non-existent because there's a burner under the floor inside of this oven. So the floor never cools down. And then obviously, you know, this one, this is a pretty famous oven buried right now. This is our Forno Bravo. This is a Napoli 140. And this oven was actually a gift from Forno Bravo and all those guys. When I opened the school, they had asked me, you know, can we put an oven inside the school? And I was like, man, I would love to have one of your ovens. And Greg Jisco, who's the president and owner of the company, said, you know, Leo, just let us know what we can do. And I think he regretted that afterwards because I want to do a tile job. And I wanted to do pennies. And my partner, Anthony, who you're going to see in the kitchen, he wouldn't let me send pennies to California to tile the oven. So we found this. These are 3/4-inch circle tiles that are mirrored. And each one of these was individually hand-placed. 25,682 hand-placed
incredible
on that oven. That was pretty cool.
That is cool.
This is a pizza press back here. I've got a double electric deck oven. This is a gas deck oven. We just installed a combi oven over here. And the combi is great because besides doing a lot of great baking in the combi, we're also roasting meat and doing a lot of things like that. I use it a lot for proofing as well. And that's always
I find the combis are really great for focaccia. I've had some phenomenal success with my combi.
I love it. And we're as soon as we open up, we're going to start doing combi cooking classes because, I heard a number that there's about 80% of the restaurants in Europe have a combi oven, and it's only about 15% here in the United States. It's a great way to cook.
Well, it's another tool that expands the repertoire of the operation.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to take you
to the door now. Okay, this is a magic door. What's happening here?
I don't know. Hopefully these guys are all dressed back here. But I got all the boys back here.
Hey,
Anthony, how you
hey,
saying?
Anthony. Good to see you.
It's Anthony.
How are we doing?
It's Footy Frank.
Hey, Frank.
What are you guys making over here?
Little tiramisu.
Tiramisu. This is for the curbside pickup menu. We're soaking lady fingers over here.
Do you sell those by the tray or by the piece?
These are going by the tray.
Wow. So it's going to work. Who's buying trays of tiramisu? Restaurants, cafes? Who's open?
Oh, no, people. Curbside pickup. Take home meat.
They're just taking them home.
Yeah.
When they talk about in Chicago, when they talk about flattening the curve, it's the curve of your belly that you're going to try to lose after the quarantine.
but what does a tray of tiramisu sell for?
I don't know. Where do we sell it?
$16 for this. It'll serve 4. In your house, probably 2. In
yeah,
house,
right.
Maybe 1.
Yeah, right. I know. That's awesome. That's a pretty cool thing.
But we've gone to full scratch kitchen over here. There's not, you know, we're not opening cans and scooping and dumping over here. Everything is made from scratch. I've got another old friend of mine. This is my buddy Danny. Danny, say hi to Peter Reinhardt.
Hey, Danny. How's it going?
Danny used to work with me downtown many years ago at another famous chain, a big restaurant chain. He was one of the corporate chefs with me, and I was able to snag him and bring him over here and cook.
Are you allowed to say that? Are you allowed to say the name of the chain?
Danny also is a Johnson & Wales graduate.
Well, that's something we have in common. So you're not allowed to say the name of the chain where he was working?
No, we used to work for Francesca's Restaurant Group.
Francesca.
And they have about 26 restaurants worldwide. And the great thing about that is that we had a lot of these little side concepts that were like one-offs. And well, yeah. They started as one-offs, and now they're turned into chains. But we got to do a lot of those one-off deals and turn into really cool places. So
you were doing like the R&D for them, huh?
Menu. Yeah. Danny's a warrior in the kitchen. I'm going to tell you, if I'm going to go to battle with somebody in the kitchen, he's one of the first guys on the line with me.
What is Danny making now with all those eggs?
I don't know what he's making. We'll see when he comes out.
When he comes back out.
He's going to make it out on Chini. We can scratch made. They're about the size of a softball. And we did a giant. What are you making right now?
I'm just making the egg wash, and then I'm going to start building.
For arancini?
Yes.
Do you have any already built?
No. Yeah, I think we have.
Let's see.
So you're selling those curbside also then? People are just coming and buying?
Yeah, we do. We change the menu once a week. And, people say like, oh, you know, I missed this last week. Can we do it again? And I think for us, it's really about not getting bored, you know, cooking the same thing all week long, and we change it up. But it really is a cool experience. Look at these arancini.
Holy cow. That's a family size of rice ball there.
And we're using cannoli rice, you know, risotto rice from Acarallo. And we're using saffron to make that rice. We've got a bolognese sauce that cooks for about 6 hours with three types of meat in it the right way. And, you know, to have that much work go into an arancini, right? These are some of the things that when people, like, have these, you know, we tell them, like, you better get a couple extra because they're not going to make it on the car ride home.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, so this is our kitchen here. And, again, you know, being that we're a school, we have a lot of small wares around. And you can see we're built to do, you know, multiple of everything, you know. So if you come here to take a class, you're going to get the experience of actually cooking by hand. You're going to cook along with us. Everybody would get their own setup. I'm going to take you into the dough room right now. This is my favorite place in the
dough room. Sure. I love the
dough
room.
This is where I quarantine myself.
And one of the things that I'll point out to right behind you is that, so many different types of flour that you keep there so that you can show people number one, how they work differently, but how each one are maybe particularly suited for a particular product.
Right. And this isn't even all of it, because then I've got stuff. There's flour everywhere. I've got bins. I've got dry storage in the back of this place. And I probably have about 22 different types of flour in here from all over the United States, all over Italy, all different mills. And it's really, the great thing about, you know, people saying, you know, we know, we're not gonna, I'll call it out. There's a lot of politics in our world, right? Sure. And a lot of times it comes down to, like, you know, what flour mill you support and all that. And I think that, you know, you were probably one of the first people to teach me that lesson, that if we're going to be educators, we need to really stay neutral and we need to teach everything, right? And that's really the stand I took. Yeah, I have the types of ingredients that I go to, like, for my own things, you know, when I'm going to do my own work. But for students coming here, it's really about teaching them why a certain flour is great, and not just because of the marketing on the front of the label. Yeah. It's really about what's inside the bag.
Exactly. And I think what we'd love to do is bring you back for another whole separate show where we talk a little bit. Maybe you do a little dough mixing for us or do a little demo for us to teach us, give us a little taste of a lesson, but also maybe have you sit with our dough panel. I call them the Yodis, our pizza Yodis, where we talk about these issues. We take questions and answers from our viewers and have you guys kind of debate over things like that. And one of the questions that comes up a lot is, you know, how do we understand the differences in the different functionality of flour and which flour is most appropriate for which products? And we'd love to have you chime in on those conversations as well.
Yeah,
because we can't cover it all with you. We could spend, you know, probably days every single day for 2 months and still not cover everything. So we want to keep bringing you back as often as you're able to come back and join us.
I would love that.
That's great.
And, you know, so we got, you know, we've got all four types of machines in here. I've got an old Hobart from the 60s, an L800. I've got a fork style mixer right here, right behind me. I've got two spirals right behind me, and then a diving arm in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
We've got water controls. We could take water out of the wall by temperature because there's a water chiller on the opposite side, as well as a booster heater above us. And then, portion water out by weight. We don't teach our classes by just pushing a button. We make everybody weigh everything out. But, you know, a lot of our big, the manufacturers that come in here, those operating big bakeries and that sort of thing, this is exactly the setup that you'd see in a commercial bakery. And this room is all climate, humidity controlled. It's all sealed. So we've really built a bubble inside of this room.
Well, before we leave, because we're almost out of time for today, but we're definitely bringing you back for another session because we're learning something. So I want to leave with maybe one Q&A moment, because this comes up a lot, is I see you had that water system back there, you know, and so can you talk briefly about your discoveries in terms of the importance of water from different regions and how it affects the dough?
So, you know, this is one of the things that everybody asked since the beginning, because, you know, I'm from Chicago. My partner is born and raised in Queens, New York, and, you know, parents came from Long Island. They were all over New York, and we always talk about water, right? As a baker, I talk about the importance of water and what it does to the structure of our dough. So, you know, if we were talking about New York water is great because that water is coming down from the Adirondacks, you know, so you've got a natural filtration process that happens, and that's why the water is so good in New York. But in Chicago, we also have a great source of water with Lake Michigan, that our water comes actually down from Canada. And it's that same kind of thing that happens, fresh water coming from Canada. The only problem that I have in Chicago is that we have a lot of chlorine in our water. So when we opened the school, my big focus was going to be, let's get the chlorine out of the water. And I could have easily gone with a reverse osmosis system. But I was approached by a company that manufactures these water systems. And they, you know, they started talking about changing the composition of water. So if I'm creating a brand here in Chicago and I decide to take that across the United States, now I can have one setup of this filtration system, take that anywhere I go, and I'll have the same exact water no matter where I go with it, right? So that was pretty cool to me.
Well, you've traveled all over the world and made pizza all over the world and other products. Can you tell the difference? You know, does your palate discern the difference between dough made, let's say, in Italy with Italian water versus the New York water versus the Chicago water?
You know, and this is another part of the argument that that we get into. So each place that we go, or what's considered traditional in these styles, right? You have to remember that the water is also traditional for that style. So, for example, I'm going to talk about Tony again, Gemignani. When Tony went and he won the Naples Cup, one of the things that he talks about when he won in Italy was that all these guys were going to Naples and using bottled water. And Tony's like, why would I use bottled water when everybody here uses water right out of their tap? Because that's, again, what they're going to recognize is this is our traditional pizza. And it's that kind of mentality that makes that pizza great, right? Now, here in Chicago, if that chlorine is in the water, the Chicago-style pizza was created with that chlorine in the water, and it affected the structure a certain way. So there is times when we talk about leave the water alone, just like in New York. It's one of those things like sacrilege if you talk about bad about New York water and pizza, right? So I think that that's really one of those main things that we have to do, really important. But as understanding water and what it affects, how it affects the crumb or the cell structure of our doughs, it does make a difference. So if you have a lot of minerals and things in the water, that can definitely create stickiness. It could create a more compact crumb. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, but there's a lot of truth to it.
It's a debate that could rage for, you know, for hours and hours, and you can get five people in a room and get six different opinions about it. But it's important to understand sort of the foundation of it. And this is helpful. And I think it's a great place to leave it today, because we'll leave with a lesson for today. But we'll bring you back for more similar type lessons, because Leo is really a master of many styles and is now becoming a master teacher as well as a master cook and product developer. So thank you, Leo, so much for the time you spent with us today, for giving us a tour of your school. We will put a link on our website on pizzaquest.com for how to see the video that Leo talked about in the last episode, the YouTube video of him making, what is it, a Chicago pie?
Yeah, stuffed pizza. It's got 1.2 million views. It's crazy.
Over a million views of his stuffy. So we want people to see that, and also a link back to the school and ways that people can reach you if they want to get your schedule and also see any other. You've got a lot of presence on YouTube, and you've got a YouTube channel now.
So YouTube channel is under North American Pizza and Culinary Academy. So search Pizza Culinary Academy. You can also search for the school all across social media by searching Pizza Culinary Academy. You can find me at Ask Leo Pizza all over social media. And it's just that simple. I just want to share with everybody what I know. And, you know, again, those of you who are interested in coming to take a course, you can see our website has a full list of those classes at www.pizzaculinaryacademy.com.
Beautiful. I'm with Leo Spazieri. I'm Peter Reinhardt. You're on Pizza Talk, presented by Pizza Quest. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter. Bye.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.